قضیه فلسطین از یاد آن نخواهد رفت و شهر مقدس بیت المقدس پایتخت فلسطین باقی خواهد ماند و قبله اول مسلمان ها برای مسلمان ها باقی خواهد ماند.
The issue of occupied Palestine will never be forgotten. The holy city of Beit al-Muqaddas will remain forever the capital of Palestine. And the first Qibla of Muslims will always be there for Muslims. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei.
This is a special coverage of a live event.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful, salam, and welcome to the live coverage of the Roul Quds Day on this Friday, the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan, April 29th, 2022. I'm Atef Erfani, hosting this program with my colleague
Mehran Derakhshande. And we'll be covering live special events taking place here in the Islamic Republic of Iran. We have special speakers on the occasion of the World Quds Day, the last Friday of the blessed month of Ramadan. This day was designated by the founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, the late Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, who named the last Friday of the fasting month of Ramadan as International Quds Day.
The main cause of crisis in West Asia region is the cancerous tumor called Israel. The fabricated regime of Israel declared existence in 1948. The regime has continued crimes against the Palestinian nation ever since. The regime of Israel has made millions of Palestinians homeless and jailed thousands of them and martyred scores of thousands of others. The Zionist regime intensified its brutal attacks against the owners of the land, the Palestinians. Since the notorious super criminal Ariel Sharon went to the state of coma, the fake regime keeps devastating the infrastructures of Palestine and bulldozing the homes and hearts of the people to make conditions insecure for them. So now, can the conscience of wakeful people keep silent?
Indeed, that's a very good question. Here in the Islamic Republic of Iran, and indeed throughout the world, in many countries, and not just Muslim countries, in many European countries, in all the continents, in Africa, in North and South America, International Quds Day or World Quds Day is held on the last Friday of the blessed month of Ramadan, where rallies and marches take place. In some European countries this year, I think it's on a Saturday or a Sunday, the weekend, but in most countries, it's today,
yes,
the last Friday of the blessed month of Ramadan, and we see rallies and marches throughout the world.
Yes, of course. And we'll be freedom-seeking people and, justice-seeking people cannot be silent. Palestine is the land in the world where human rights are violated around the clock. But the so-called defenders of human rights and international organizations have kept silent towards the heinous crimes of the Zionist regime. And this silence has emboldened the fabricated regime of Israel to continue killing of innocent people. But as I said, the justice-seeking people and the freedom-seeking people cannot be silent toward these heinous crimes against Palestinian people.
That's right. And we'll be focusing certainly on the events taking place here in Tehran, and indeed throughout the Islamic Republic of Iran, many rallies and marches throughout the country with huge masses of people taking part. Today, of course, is Friday. We have Friday prayers as well. And this is the focus of our program today.
Yes, so After a short break, we will be back with you.
و به توفیق الهی امت اسلامی و ملت مسلمان فلسطین بر دشمنان خودشون قطعا پیروز خواهند شد و خواهند دید اون روزی را که ریشه رژیم جعلی صهیونیست از سرزمین فلسطین کنده خواهد شد.
With God's grace and divine providence, the Islamic Ummah and the Palestinian nation will emerge victorious, inflicting a decisive defeat on their enemies, and we shall see the day when the fake Zionist regime will be uprooted once and for all from the land of Palestine. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei.
Welcome back. This is a live coverage of the World Quds Day. It's 9:07 a.m. in Tehran. And we are back to you. For your information, this year's World Quds Day arrives while the cause of Palestine is facing four main issues. Some Arab regimes have increased efforts to normalize their ties with the usurper Zionist regime. The fake Zionist regime has escalated brutality against Palestinian defenseless people. Brave Palestinians have increased martyrdom seeking operations against criminal Zionist military, and horror has covered the entire structure of the Zionist security apparatus. Some of the Arab regimes led by the United Arab Emirates continue betraying the Palestinian cause through normalizing of ties with the occupying Zionist regime. A few days before the blessed month of Ramadan, two meetings were held with the presence of Israeli and Arab officials in the Egyptian Sharm el-Sheikh and Negev desert of the occupied Palestine. The point to note is that the Arab and Zionist officials met in the occupied territories for the first time. It was quite clear that the fabricated regime of Israel was pursuing political and economic goals through normalization of ties with the Arab regimes. Politically speaking, the regime strives to relieve itself from isolation in West Asia. And last year, the Zionist regime tried to deceive a number of Arab regimes, but the UAE, Bahrain, Morocco, and Sudan were the only regimes which betrayed the Quds cause in normalization of ties with the criminal regime. And economically, the Zionist regime, the fabricated regime of Israel, has made efforts to normalize ties with Arab regimes to get rid of the economic pressures through selling weapons to Arab countries.
That's right. So the World Quds Day rallies and marches this year have taken on an added importance because of the efforts of the Zionist regime to normalize its ties with a number of Arab countries.
Yes, overshadowed by these issues.
And that's right.
Yes, after a short break, we will be back regarding this issue, speaking about this issue. So stay with us, please.
Allahu Akbar.
Imam Khomeini said, "The racist Zionist regime has always been a source of discord among regional states."
Uh, Okay, we're back. As we said, because of the efforts by the Zionist regime to normalize its ties with a number of Arab countries, the rallies and marches, the World Quds Day rallies and marches this year have taken on an added significance. The United Nations Humanitarian Affairs Office has announced that in 2021, last year, 496 attacks were registered against Palestinians by Israeli settlers in the occupied territories. 370 of these 496 attacks resulted in financial damage. 126 of these attacks resulted in human loss of life, loss of Palestinian life. This is while the number of attacks in 2020 was 385. The Palestinian Statistics Center announced in last year, in 2021, that 17 Palestinian children in the occupied West Bank and 61 Palestinian children in the Gaza Strip were martyred by the criminal Zionist regime. The number of Palestinian detainees has also exceeded 1,100 in the current year. The Committee for Support of Palestinian Prisoners has also announced that more than 200 Palestinians have been arrested by the Israeli military since 1st of April. The Palestinian people have chosen resistance as the only way to take on the crimes and atrocities of the Zionist regime. They have carried out four martyrdom-seeking operations since late March, during which at least 14 Zionists have been killed. And these were just some of the statistics, which shows that the Israeli regime has increased its crimes and atrocities against defenseless Palestinians, both in the occupied West Bank of the River Jordan and in the Gaza Strip this year. And this has given added urgency to the World Quds Day rallies and marches this year.
So the question here is that why should the U.S. give billions of dollars annually to the fabricated regime of Israel to kill Palestinians? Why should Washington aid and abet the fake regime with arms and equipment to massacre Palestinians? You know, because they claim to be defenders of human rights in the world. Why should Israel own the only atomic arsenal in West Asia region?
That's right. And all the claims by Washington about so-called human rights, they've been shown to be lies because obviously they don't care at all about the human rights of the Palestinians in the West Bank and in the Gaza Strip. That's patently obvious for everyone to see. So all the claims coming from Washington about human rights should be taken with a pinch of salt.
Thank you very much. So after a short break, we will be back with you, dear listeners.
Human values are alien to the Zionist regime. Imam Khomeini. Everybody together, unanimously, with one voice, present at the glorious demonstration of God's Day.
Welcome back. This is the live coverage of World Quds Day. It's 9:14 a.m. Tehran time, and we go live to Press TV headquarters.
That's right. We're going live to Press TV headquarters, where they have invited Professor Ahlan Mohtaset, a professor of media studies from California State University and San Bernardino, California. So let's listen in to Professor Ahlan Mohtaset, who's taking part in this discussion.
Colonial forces against Al-Aqsa and against the Palestinian neighborhoods in Jerusalem. So I think it's very crucial to show our support to the people Murabitin in Jerusalem. The least we could do is to make sure that we talk about Jerusalem, we celebrate Jerusalem Day, we actually support them in every way possible, including supporting them financially, supporting their sumud. There are young people who are taking young Palestinians every day to prison by Israeli forces by simply just, you know, being in Al-Aqsa, around Al-Aqsa, or sometimes in Bab al-Amud, one of the main gates, which is also known as Damascus Gate, you know, in Old Jerusalem. And the fines to release those young people ranges from $2,000 to $3,000 or $4,000. So there are so many ways we could show our support to our people in Jerusalem, especially around Al-Aqsa Mosque.
So Ms. Mohtasab, tell us more about the importance of media coverage of what is happening and the support that we are expected to give our Palestinian brothers and sisters who are oppressed by the Israeli regime. And the fact that, of course, mainstream media is not covering any of this, the attacks against these Palestinian worshippers in Al-Aqsa Mosque and everything else that is happening there.
Well, taking into consideration the coverage that is happening now on the Russian invasion of Ukraine, it even like makes it more, you know, devastating for us Palestinians and all supporters of human rights everywhere to see this just unbelievable gap in coverage, right? So we are treated as Palestinians as non-existent or, you know, less of humans in terms of all the rights, all the coverage and the attention given to Ukrainians. While we have, you know, a colonial project that has been going on for over 73 years in Palestine, and we have at least, you know, the part in terms of the occupation of the West Bank and Gaza and the Golan Heights, although for me it's old occupation all across Palestine, but even if we take only that part, I mean, it is in the United Nations, you know, chart that it is an illegal occupation. And that gives Palestinians the right to defend themselves and the right to resist. Resist with all actually tools available for them, including military or armed resistance. But unfortunately, this right, while it's celebrated in places like Ukraine, it's absolutely suppressed and, you know, flipped when it comes to Palestine. So you only see the coverage of Palestinians in the United States almost always when Palestinians are perpetrators, like, you know, the gunmen who went into Tel Aviv or other places, you know, and shot Israelis. That was all over the news. But in the last month, there are estimates of about 40 Palestinians killed by Israeli forces and hundreds wounded and hundreds also incarcerated, you know, imprisoned by the Israeli forces. And you almost never see any of that. You know, if you are going to see Palestinians, as I said, it's going to be to show them as the perpetrators or the terrorists. You know, one would watch the news in the United States and think Palestinians are occupying Israel, not the other way around. And it is very sad. And at the same time, it highlights the importance of alternative channels. You know, that would bring those important stories. It also highlights the role of social media and its different arms. Although I have to warn, like, social media is also a colonized landscape. It's not free, but at least, you know, there is some space of disruption and resistance to these tech corporates in the United States and beyond. So I hope that the least that your viewers could do, if they are listening and tuning in, is to actually highlight, amplify, and center Palestinian voices from Palestine in the resistance of the Israeli colonial project in Palestine, especially the Judaization of Jerusalem, the constant attacks on neighborhoods, on people, and on holy places in Jerusalem. I mean, we could talk about Al-Aqsa. Of course, we are Muslims, and that's very important for us. But at the same time, look at what happened to the Resurrection Church, you know, in Jerusalem, and preventing Palestinian Christians from reaching their church for worship during Easter. You know, of course, you know, Greek Orthodox, their celebration of Easter is not the same as the Western one. So they allowed foreigners to enter the church, even Jews to enter the church, but not Palestinian Christians. Same thing with worshippers in Al-Aqsa Mosque. They allowed, you know, Jewish settlers to attack it and to invade it and desecrate it, while preventing Muslims during the holiest month of the year from praying there. But, you know, alhamdulillah, when Muslims, you know, persevered and entered Al-Aqsa on the 27th night of Ramadan, it is estimated that about 250,000 prayed in Al-Aqsa, at least. And that gives us hope that, you know, we should just keep on pushing back and we should keep on resisting and amplifying the Palestinian struggle in Jerusalem and elsewhere.
That is right. You pointed to some very important issues right there. First of all, the fact that the war in Ukraine right now is highlighting the double standards, particularly in Western media, the way they are covering the conflict there and what's happening in Palestine, the atrocities against Palestinian people. We have with us Richard Falk now, former UN Special Rapporteur on the situation of human rights in Palestine. Now, Mr. Falk, when Ukrainians are fighting against occupiers, they are called heroes. When Palestinians are fighting against occupiers, they are called terrorists. Why this double standard?
Well, it reflects the biases of the Western world. It's partly racism, and it's partly religious, and it's partly geopolitical. The strategic interests in Ukraine are very much aligned with the defense of the country and with the humiliation of Russia. In the Palestinian context, the emphasis is on support for Israel, no matter what it does, no matter how engaged in criminal activity, interference with the rights of religion, of worship, and the whole pattern is one of vivid double standards premised on the alignment of the Western countries, particularly the United States.
So, Professor Falk, we also see attacks happening against Palestinians in the holy month of Ramadan, and these attacks are against worshippers who are just praying. They're not doing anything wrong. They're not violating any rules. They're simply praying in Al-Aqsa Mosque. Why these attacks, especially during the holy month of Ramadan?
Well, I think there's another dimension of the Ukrainian preoccupation. And that is, no one's looking at what Israel does. So they're using excessive force, as they've often done in the past, and they feel, probably correctly, that they will not be held in any way accountable, either in the media or by international law or by the UN, that there is such a totalist preoccupation with the Ukrainian crisis that it gives this kind of freedom of maneuver to the Israelis, who seem to be eager to escalate the tensions with the Palestinians for whatever reason, maybe as preparation for a new assault on Gaza. They've been very aggressive in relation to Lebanon. So there are many issues at stake.
And Professor Mohtasib also pointed to the role of social media at this point in time. How effective do you consider social media to be in order to raise awareness about the situation of Palestinians? We do know that mainstream media is definitely not covering the atrocities committed against Palestinians by the Israeli regime.
Well, I think social media is indispensable in at least making transparent some of this Israeli criminality, and it has given attention to the findings of several human rights organizations that are widely respected, that Israel is an apartheid state, not only a settler colonial state, but it practices apartheid as the means of controlling Palestinian resistance and the Palestinian people, and that's really an international crime that's ongoing. But the West, and especially the United States, is absolutely silent about that.
So, Professor Mohtasab, let's have you back in this discussion. How important do you consider public support for Palestinian? How can it affect their resistance against the Israeli regime? Could it tip the scales in the favor of them?
I'm not sure about tipping the scale in favor of Palestinians, but I'm afraid it's the only thing left for Palestinians after all the normalization projects and by Arab countries and all the changing political changes around them, the fact that Israel is doing whatever it pleases now without any accountability or pushback from, you know, any you know, countries like the United States or even the Arab world itself, all of that diminishing, you know, governmental and state, you know, support for Palestinians, leave them with almost nothing except public opinion and except non-NGOs and non-governmental organizations like, you know, the great reports that came out of Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch, and even from the Israeli human rights organization B'Tselem itself, calling it, as Professor Folks actually just said, calling it what it is, which is apartheid. I think those are very important to keep the conversation alive. And in terms of social media and how the public opinion, you know, world public opinion is manifested there, we have to be careful not to take like a very optimistic, you know, utopian view of social media totally, and not also to have a pessimistic one. It's in between. If we look at tech corporations like Facebook, Instagram, like the big ones, Twitter to a lesser extent, and even TikTok now, these are, for many Palestinian activists, are actually considered colonial spaces, you know. It's a colonial landscape. And Palestinian activists, and this is a study I have been doing actually on Palestinian digital resistance in May of last year, they view this as a colonial space, and they actually try to decolonize this landscape through their work and through their activism, through outsmarting the algorithms that has been very suppression or practices suppression of their voices. Sorry, it is after fasting, so I'm trying to have my ideas clear. And so they have been using a lot of smart and creative ways, I call it creative resistance, on those colonized digital spaces and defying all the attempts to silence their voices. And also not only the voices of Palestinian activists, but, you know, the voices of anyone who supports Palestinians, you know, taking down their accounts, taking down their posts, putting them on probation, etc. All of these tactics, the hostile tactics, and sometimes those mount to actual surveillance of certain accounts of some of the famous Palestinian influencers, like Muna Hawa, for example, and others on the ground. So we have to go into with this mindset when we talk about social media and its importance. It is very crucial. It's one of the last battlefields for us as Palestinians, but at the same time, it's not as progressive landscape as one might think of it. So we have to always keep in mind that they actually, like Facebook and Instagram, they have an actual unit, Israeli unit, that works, you know, to make sure that they actively suppress Palestinian voices that shows the Israeli crimes in Palestine. They also have constant communication with the Israeli government, and they take orders from the Israeli government in what they could allow and what they shouldn't allow in terms of Palestinian voices.
Okay, now, Professor Falk, Professor Mohtasab here pointed to the normalization of ties with Israel by some Arab countries and how that has emboldened the Israeli regime. Could we have your take on that?
Yes, there's no doubt that that's an adverse development for the Palestinian struggle, and it has affected Israel's sense that it has a free hand with respect to the Palestinians, but with respect to the whole region, and that includes its hard line toward Iran. At the same time, the Palestinians have had their victories in the International Criminal Court. It authorized the investigation of Israeli crimes. The apartheid report of respected human rights organizations have really changed the perception of Israel as a legitimate state. And those reports are extremely well documented, and they can't be really challenged except in a very crude and smearing way. Israel and the U.S. don't try to respond. They just dismiss them as evidence of anti-Semitism. And that's a way of distracting the attention, shifting the burden from the message to the messenger. And I think they're losing that symbolic war for legitimacy. And if you consider how most of the conflicts in the world after 1945 have ended, they've ended not by the side with the military capabilities prevailing, but they've ended when the side that has won what I call the legitimacy war prevails. And that happened in Vietnam and Afghanistan, in a whole series of countries, and in all the anti-colonial wars. And there's no reason to think that that will not, in the end, determine the outcome in Palestine itself.
So, Professor Mohtaseb, you heard Professor Fox's comments. Do you believe that people living in those Arab countries that have normalized ties with Israel have a certain responsibility to make their voices heard? Because obviously this move was without the public support of those countries.
I mean, in principle, of course, the answer is yes. But at the same time, those are the same people have not been able to rise up against tyranny in the first place. So to be able to protest, you know, the policies, the normalizing policies of their states, their governments, they have to be empowered to a level where they stand up against tyranny in their countries in the first place, and to seek democracy, you know what I mean? So those are very connected topics. I mean, for them to be able to protest any aspect of governmental actions, they really have to be at the level of recognizing, as Paulo Freire says in his, you know, book, Pedagogy of the Oppressed, you have to have this conscience, you know, like self-consciousness about your oppressed state, to be able to rise up and change and have actual social change. And once that happens, then it becomes very natural that the people in the Arab world, I would argue the majority of people, are actually with the Palestinians, and the majority consider Palestine as their central struggle, their joint central struggle with Palestinians. They really, most of them don't even disconnect it from their daily struggles. Unfortunately, after the suppression of the Arab Spring and the Arab revolutions, it became harder and harder for those voices to be heard. But I'm hopeful, you know, as Professor Folk just said, that we have a lot of implementations on the ground of decisions and reports and United Nations, statements and decisions to support Palestinians and to actually call the Israeli atrocities with their name, you know, what is happening. And that gives us hope that things, no matter what, would change in the right direction eventually.
Thank you, Professor Mohtaseb. Well, in just a couple of hours, people will be beginning their rallies in different parts of the world to show their public support for the oppressed Palestinians. And, of course, we had with us Professor Richard Falk, a former UN Special Rapporteur on the situation on human rights in Palestine, and Professor Ahla Mohtaseb, Professor of Media Studies from California, who shared their views regarding the support that Palestinians need in order to raise public awareness at a time when mainstream media is definitely not giving proper coverage to what's happening there. Before we move on to the rallies themselves, let's listen to some of the comments that were made by Palestinian resistance movement leaders.
والفداء على المسلمين والمسيحيين هذه مقدمة ليس فقط لانتفاضة بل هي مقدمة لحرب إقليمية كبيرة إذا استمرت الأحداث على القدس الشريف. وبالتالي نعم الشعب الفلسطيني واصل نضاله ومجهاده في غزة والضفة والداخل في عمل دائم ولا ينقطع، لكن الأخطر هو محاولات إسرائيل لفرض السيادة والهوية اليهودية على بيت المقدس. أما حول موضوع يوم القدس العالمي، فنحن أولا وقبل كل شيء نوجه التحية إلى روح الإمام الخميني صاحب هذه الدعوة الكريمة، باعتبار يوم القدس يوم الجمعة الأخير من رمضان في كل عام يوما للقدس العالمي، يلتف المسلمون في كل مكان حول القدس ويعود المسلمين لدورهم وعلى أن يعود المسلمين لدورهم في حماية واستعادة القدس من العدو الصهيوني. تستدعي وحدة الأمة الإسلامية والعربية في مواجهة المشروع الصهيوني وإحباط المخططات الأمريكية الصهيونية.
Welcome back. This is the live coverage of World Quds Day. This is, I think it's 9:37 Tehran time.
That's right. We are following the live coverage of events here in Tehran. And we're also following Press TV's coverage of International Quds Day rallies and marches.
Yes, the founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, in support of the Palestinian cause, designated the last Friday of the blessed month of Ramadan as International Quds Day. Imam Khomeini urged all Muslims of the world to join hands to unite in support of the oppressed Palestinians and in confrontation of the Israeli regime and its backers.
Okay, let's go for a short break. We'll be back.
الكرام الذائبون العابدون الحامدون السائحون الراجعون الساجدون الآمرون والناهون أبشري يا قدس إن الفتح جاء
Okay, we're back with live coverage of International Quds Day events here in the Islamic Republic of Iran. It's 9:41 a.m. here in Tehran. At 10 o'clock, about 19 minutes from now, the rallies and marches throughout the Islamic Republic of Iran will start on International Quds Day in support of the Palestinian cause.
Just 20 minutes, yes.
That's right, just under 20 minutes from now. I can say that the founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, the late Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, said, World Quds Day isn't just the day of Palestine, it's the day of Islam. It's the day for reviving Islam. It's truly an international day which doesn't just concern the city of Al-Quds. It is the day when the poor and downtrodden confront the arrogant powers. In fact, Quds Day symbolizes unity and determination of the Islamic Ummah in relation to the crimes committed by the Israeli regime in Palestine, in Gaza, and in other Islamic lands. And that is indeed very true. These comments from the founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran is very true. World Quds Day isn't just, it certainly highlights attention on the issue of Palestine, but it is a day for all Muslims. For indeed, it is a day where non-Muslims as well can take part in these rallies and marches, bringing attention to the crimes being committed by the Israeli regime.
Thank you. And now we go live to Press TV headquarters, where we have experts talking about World Quds Day. Please stay with us.
The time in Al-Aqsa during the month of Ramadan, I have a feeling it actually irks them a bit. So there is this thinking that whereby if the Muslims can enjoy their time under occupation, even for a bit, it is not good for occupation, and it is understandable from the from their point of view. However, like the Muslims around the world has a responsibility to understand that this is happening every year, and try to preempt this through pressure and many other activities.
And how important is this Quds Day rally in order to bring together the Muslim Ummah to show some kind of solidarity in support for Palestinian?
Yeah, it is important because with all the world events that are happening, and every year we seem to have a new war in different parts of the world. With these kind of rallies and with the Palestinians being active and the news media as yourself and others actually covering this, it actually helps the Muslims to get back on track, because majority of the international media are always distracting Muslims and the Muslim world population from the real issues of Palestine, the occupation and the difficulties of families and a lot of aspects of the occupation. So it is important for these rallies to happen and to be covered so that it can remind us and it can bring us back to the real issues that matters.
Okay, so let's bring in Dr. Mazen Qabsia, a Palestinian scientist and author who is with us from Bethlehem. Doctor, if you could please tell us at a point in time where our previous guests told us we really can't be that hopeful that social media can help create more public awareness, because of course those social media outlets are also being controlled by the same people who are controlling mainstream media. How important do you find these Quds Day rallies, and how important do you find independent news outlets and the fact that we should have more of them?
Indeed, this is a tremendous time in history where we have you know, unparalleled opportunities and unparalleled challenges. One of the opportunities is the number of Palestinians and Muslims and others around the world, Arab people, etc., who are aware is highest in our history. And more people are becoming involved in activism. And this is very important to reach a maximum number of people, because ultimately people are what changes policy, not a few politicians who dictate this or the media owners of the corporate media who are run by pro-Zionist groups and individuals. So I think we have an opportunity, and I see changes, and I'm glad to be alive at this period in history where individuals can make a difference that is existential for us and existential for the people of this earth.
Dr. Fobsia, since you're in Bethlehem, and we've seen so many attacks recently happening in the Jenin camp, of course, the occupied West Bank, and also this reminds us of what happened last year in Gaza, which even led to an 11-day war. The question I have to ask is, why do you think, in what way, actually, do you think that Palestinians can show more resistance, because obviously they're being constantly attacked? Do you think that some kind of violent resistance would be the solution to them? And let's mention that this is completely legitimate according to the Human Rights Charter. People who are being attacked on are allowed to defend themselves, even if it means resorting to violence.
Well, what we see in Palestinian history, and I wrote a book about resistance in Palestine, what we see is actually waves of resistance. This is natural. In South Africa, there were waves of resistance. There were 15 of them before the apartheid regime fell down. So we see basically people go up in resistance and then go down and up and down. You don't expect resistance to be a straight line. These uprisings, as we call them, or intifadas, are natural phenomena. We had the last one in May, if you recall, that involved Palestinians on both sides of the Green Line and Palestinians abroad who resisted, basically, and engaged in massive resistance. Now, in terms of the types of tools that resistance uses, of course, as you said, international law gives the colonized, occupied people the right to resist by any method they choose. Normally, people resist in various methods, and there's a bell-shaped curve of resistance. Some of it is armed, some of it is non-armed resistance, and this is natural also because different people resist in different ways. I think when a quarter million people were in the Al-Aqsa Mosque the night before this one, and Laylat al-Qadr, this is a form of resistance. 250,000 people engaged in resistance, because prayer is also resistance, presence on the ground is resistance. There is all sorts of hundreds of forms of resistance. And the Palestinian people do not give up. And that's what's what gives us optimistic, is that we don't see that the Zionists will win. It's just a matter of how many more uprisings does it take to finally have that straw, as they say, that breaks the camel's back. So we are getting there. I believe in the next 5 or 10 years, we will have that final uprising, just like the Soweto uprising in South Africa, and that will be the end of the Zionist racist regime.
Okay, so Mu'ad Muhammad Zaki, do you agree with Dr. Gumsia about the end of the Zionist regime being very close, considering the number of uprisings?
Yes, I think that if the United States has failed in Afghanistan, and one of the biggest world powers and one of the biggest donors for Israeli policies in the Middle East has failed in Afghanistan after all these years. There's no chance that Israel can actually win in this occupation. They have to come to an understanding that the reality that occupation does not work, especially when there is a good resistance like the one that the Palestinians have. And after all these years, the Palestinians' hope for their homeland back has not failed. So Israel has to come to the table and actually give up some of their claims to the land and find a reasonable solution for this, because at the end of the day, Palestinians are as humans as Israelis, but no occupier has the right under international law to occupy someone else's land. So they have to find their own land or go back, find a place back, backed by their supporters, maybe find a place in the U.S., where they can actually live peacefully, and all those billions of dollars that goes to Israel could be actually given to them for development. But at the end of the day, yes, there's no chance that the Israeli occupation will last.
So, Dr. Gomsia, Mr. Zaki also agrees with you. How long do you think... Actually, one thing that really interests me as a journalist... See, the young Palestinians who are actually resisting, this means that this is going down generation to generation. And after almost seven decades, nothing has changed as far as the Israeli occupiers are concerned. They were probably hoping that this resistance would eventually die down with new generations coming up. And this is not happening. Can you please elaborate more on that and this culture of resistance that is obviously part of Palestinian culture?
I mean, it is natural for colonized people. It's not just a matter of occupation, but it is colonization. It's natural for colonized people to resist colonization, to resist ethnic cleansing. I mean, there are 14 million Palestinians in the world. 8 million of us are refugees or displaced people. This is an existential struggle for us. That's why even though some of us succumb and, of course, get old, like our president, and start cooperating with the occupiers, the majority of the people, vast majority, 99.9% of the people, consider it an existential problem, and so they will resist. This, again, as a biologist, as a scientist, I would say is a natural phenomena. It is not a matter of geopolitics or a matter of immediate events that happen in Ukraine or Syria or something that would impact the resistance. The resistance will come and go. As I said, we had 14 uprisings, 15 maybe, if you count the last one. Then we really will continue to have these uprisings until we have liberation. What I see, of course, is that the number of Palestinians increase. So even if a small fraction of them are engaged in active resistance, that fraction will continue to grow. The Zionists, on the other hand, are losing ground because since 1973, they have basically lost the ability to use military power to dictate their will on the people of the Middle East. Military power is no longer actually a useful tool for occupiers, colonizers, to dictate their power on people. That's because of the evolving nature of the resistance and the evolving nature of people and nature of societies around the world. So I believe strongly that we are coming to the end of colonization. Colonization can end in one of three ways, as we know. Either the Algerian model, where the colonizers pack their bags and go to Europe, and that's rare to happen, by the way. And the second is genocide of the natives. Even the first scenario involves genocide because 2 million Algerians were killed and 1 million French left Algeria. The second is genocide of the natives, as happened in the U.S. and in Australia. That's also rare. And the third and most common scenario, like happened in South Africa, in Latin America and others, is for the racist ideology to end, for colonization to end, and for the descendants of colonizers and colonized who want to live together to stay in one country, like happened in South America, Central America, Caribbean islands, Southeast Asia, and as I said, most recently, South Africa. There's no fourth solution or scenario, so to speak.
Okay, so, Mr. Zaki, as our other guests also pointed to the fact that Israel is becoming weaker and weaker, and we also do know that that facade of being invincible from the Israeli regime is falling down eventually, and the true face of the Israeli regime is becoming more apparent right now, with Palestinian prisoners being able to escape Israeli prisons, and also the resistance and everything else that's happening in the occupied territories. Could you please elaborate more, in your opinion, about Israel's vulnerabilities, as we have some live images also coming in from Iran's city of Bojnoord, where Otsay rallies have started?
Right. Israel, their influence, yes, it has been decreasing, especially when it comes to their influence on Western countries. However, at the same time, you have to understand there's a lot of Middle Eastern and Gulf countries and others that are actually starting to support Israel more, establishing relations, promoting friendly ties with Israel, and this actually goes against the Palestinian cause. And the population of these countries, majority of these countries, do not have that kind of freedom under a democracy that they can actually pressure the government. So they do not actually have an understanding of how to go about even pressuring their governments. Some countries, yes, they have certain elections and where they can do some influence, but at the same time, it is quite hard. Even the Arab Spring failed. So there is a lack of pressure that the Muslim populations, especially in the Arab countries, that can actually have a big impact against Israel. On the other hand, they all have social media, but they all are not coordinated enough to actually use social media for the Palestinian cause, because the organizations that are there to actually support the Palestinian cause, they do not have the kind of funding to reach everybody, to educate the Muslim populations in their country and even the non-Muslim populations that support the Palestinian cause in their country. And at the same time, on the other side, in the Western countries, what you're seeing is that a lot of the tide of left-wing political movements are coming into power or having influence, especially in the U.S., and this gives a chance for the Palestinians to be seen as humans, as equals to Israelis, at least in their view. And this allows the Palestinians to say, hey, look, I need my rights too. I am as human as you are. So now you have a situation in the U.S. where the Palestinian human rights actually could be pushed to a more fair narrative. And at the same time, when Trump was in power, because the Israelis gave so much of, so much of influence for and support for Trump, now the Democrats are not as supportive of the Israelis. So there is a lot of dynamics going on in politics. So it is important for us to understand all of these things. And yes, on the one hand, Israeli influence is going down on certain aspects. And on the other hand, in the Muslim world, I would say they are actually rising a bit. Their influence is growing a bit, at least when it comes to establishing trade, friendly relations, economic ties.